This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off this week. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on November 19th, 2025.
MAGA world appears to be fraying, and Trump is struggling to keep it all together. From the Epstein files to the H-1B visa saga and the economy, his recent comments on a number of issues has split the party.
Well, that's sad. Hate to see a split Republican Party.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
In these critical times.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Oh, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other very fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com, thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. All right, well, as many folks are gearing up out there for the holidays, including visits and meals with friends and family members that they may not see or sort of be forced to be to spend time with at other times of the years.
Yep.
Hi, Des.
Hi.
That's Desi Doyen. And as some of those folks may still be dyed-in-the-wool Trump supporters that you're going to run into back home over the holidays, that even as Trump's supporters, even from hardcore MAGA folks like Georgia's Marjorie Taylor Greene, if she is any indication, Trump's support may now be actually beginning to wane. For real. Maybe. That, in any event, according to both recent polling and a lot of reporting on various elements of MAGA, finding that, well, it may be starting to crack up a bit amid recent events. With all of that, I thought it might be a good time to check in with our MAGA whisperer, Rich Loges. We call him our MAGA whisperer. He's a longtime member of what he describes as the MAGA cult, but he finally broke up with them. He began trying to make amends with friends and family, and he ultimately went on to form LeavingMAGA.org with the mission, according to their website, to, quote, empower others to leave MAGA and tell their stories, foster reconciliation with their friends and family, develop movement leaders to help others leave. So is all of this talk of a MAGA breakup actually real this time? Is it reflected by what Loges is seeing from folks who are reaching out to his group? And does he have any advice for folks who may be soon finding themselves in close quarters with MAGA friends and family over the holidays? Rich Loges will join us to discuss all of that next. Why are you looking at me that way, Desi Doyen?
I suspect that many, many people like me have some very deep-seated MAGA members in their families, and that does make the holidays really challenging sometimes.
So I suspect you're looking forward to Rich Loges' advice at
yes.
this point. In the meantime, we spoke earlier this week with attorney Keith Barber, speaking of lifelong Republicans who now see the light. That's also the case with Keith. We talked to him about the Trump Justice Department's indictment of former FBI Director James Comey, which also seems to be falling apart right now, more today perhaps than ever. When we spoke to Keith on Monday, it was on the heels of a 24-page order that was released by a federal judge that day, finding that the grand jury indictment of Comey for supposedly lying to Congress included, quote, a disturbing pattern of profound investigative missteps that may, quote, undermine the integrity of the grand jury proceeding. This, of course, is the case that was brought against Comey by Donald Trump's former insurance lawyer, Lindsay Halligan, who had no prosecutorial experience when she was tapped by Trump to become interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia after Trump had pushed out the previous U.S. attorney that he had appointed there for refusing to bring a case against Comey because he said, well, there is no good reason to do so. Well, Just days later, just after her appointment, and just before the statute of limitations would run out on the case that Trump wanted to bring against Comey, who he had fired during his first term for essentially refusing to help him cover up Russia's interference in the 2016 election. Well, just days after she was appointed, Halligan obtained a two-count indictment from a federal grand jury against Comey after she had presented the case to them herself. She was the only prosecutor in the room. No other actual prosecutors, you know, career prosecutors who had done this sort of thing before, who know how this procedure actually happens, they were not joining her in the grand jury room or in signing on to the indictment. She's the only one who signed on to it. Well, Comey has filed a number of challenges to that indictment, including that Halligan is not lawfully seated as a U.S. attorney at all, to the argument that he was vindictively and selectively targeted for prosecution. That is unlawful, though it is usually very hard to prove. Now, when I spoke to Keith at the beginning of the week, I had a bunch of questions for him jotted down based on that day's extraordinary ruling by the judge, who had been considering whether to turn over the grand jury transcripts and audio recordings over to Comey's defense team, as they had requested as part of their motion to toss the case based on selective and vindictive prosecution. That's a step that is rarely allowed, handing over the grand jury transcripts, but it was granted by the judge on Monday in this particular case, given, among other things, the, quote, profound investigative missteps that he found by Halligan, including the fact that, among other things, both the beginning and the end of the grand jury transcript itself appeared to be missing entirely. Or rather, it was not recorded or transcribed at all for some reason that was not explained, with the court reporter apparently being sent home after the grand jury had voted against one of the charges in the initial indictment that was presented to them by Halligan, and before a second indictment was then approved by the grand jury, supposedly approved, and that was the one that was, you know, turned over to the court and led to Comey's indictment. Well, one of the questions that I had jotted down to ask Keith about on that Monday was about an assertion that I think, Desi, you had brought to my attention.
Yes.
Made by an attorney on social media who had suggested that Halligan might have essentially just made up that second grand jury indictment and signed it herself. Maybe that was why the transcript, the grand jury transcript, didn't exist or something. She was the only prosecutor to sign this thing. That is unusual. But that maybe she kind of just made the whole thing up without actually getting approval from the grand jury. And as crazy as that seemed, I had written that question down to get Keith Barber's thoughts about, to find out what he thought about this particular theory. But when I talked to him, time was short. And frankly, that question seemed at the time to be, frankly, so crazy and couldn't possibly be the case theory that I just, we ran out of time. That was one I chose not to ask him. That a federal prosecutor, even one with zero prosecutorial experience like Halligan, would essentially just make up an indictment and sign it and present it to the judge as if the grand jury had actually voted to accept it. Seemed
surprise.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Well, yeah, funny thing that, according to a bunch of outlets today, but I'll work from MS Now, formerly MSNBC, for the moment. The grand jury that charged former FBI Director James Comey never saw the version of the indictment that interim U.S. Attorney Lindsey Halligan signed and that was delivered to the judge. This was acknowledged by the government on Wednesday in an extraordinary concession that could nullify the entire indictment. Halligan, they report, initially presented a three-count indictment, and the grand jury rejected one of those three counts. Lawyers for the Justice Department told U.S. District Judge Michael Nachmanoff in a tense hearing on Wednesday morning. But rather than drafting and presenting a new two-count indictment to the grand jury, to the full grand jury, Halligan simply printed a new version of the indictment without actually presenting it to the grand jury.
Amazing.
The judge went on to question how the second version was actually signed by the jury's foreperson if the full grand jury was not present, because apparently the indictment that was turned over to the court had Halligan's signature on it and that of the foreperson from the jury. Well, Halligan, who did not otherwise speak during Wednesday's hearing until she was called on by the judge to confirm what had happened here, well, she admitted that only the foreperson of the grand jury and one other grand juror were actually present for the signing of that second version, and that she never presented it as a new indictment to the full grand jury. As NBC confirms, Halligan said that the indictment was in fact signed by the foreperson, but not reviewed by the entire grand jury, as the first one was, the one that they rejected. So that crazy theory that I jotted down to ask Keith about, if time allowed, I mean, frankly, you brought it up to me, Des. I thought, well, this couldn't possibly be the case.
Yeah, I know. That's just such misconduct. No one would do that.
But
really?
Yes, that you would essentially make up a second indictment and sign it and eventually turn it over to the court.
And think that would be okay.
Yeah. Well,
or that she could get away with it.
Apparently, she did. Well, at least she did think she could get away with it. Whether she'll get away with it does not look like it's going to come to pass, but we will see. The courtroom, reportedly, including the judge, was reportedly stunned into silence, I would guess so, upon hearing Halligan's admission about this. Remember, she's a tax attorney. She's a tax lawyer. She was working in some, some low-level job in the in the White House legal office or something when the guy who was originally assigned to be the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia was either pushed out or was fired because he would not bring this case against James Comey. He also didn't want to bring a similar case against New York Attorney General Letitia James, which Halligan also ended up bringing a few weeks later after the Comey case. So that guy, Eric Siebert, he was pushed out because he wouldn't do Trump's bidding. He refused to do Trump's bidding. He was a Trump appointee, by the way. But he was pushed out because he wouldn't do it. Trump taps this attorney in the White House who he had hired because I think she was pretty. She was actually a former beauty contest contestant or something. He puts her in charge of the U.S. District Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia, despite never having any prosecutorial experience, and tells her, go indict the FBI director, the former FBI director. And of course, she does it, but she doesn't know what she's doing. Or maybe she does and she doesn't care. James Comey's attorney, Michael Dreeben, then argued after all of this came out that the judge should simply throw out the case and that he didn't even need to dismiss the indictment, as the defense has been seeking, because for all intents and purposes, quote, there is no indictment. Now, in a court filing later Wednesday, the DOJ argued that there was no practical difference between the two indictments because, well, the charges in the final version, quote, are identical to the second and third charges that were included in the proposed indictment that was provided to the grand jury, in which they said no to one of those charges. Now, I'm not an attorney. I don't know if you're allowed to, bring a three-count indictment. One of them is turned down and you say, okay, well, we'll just go with the other two then. I don't know. That seems to be what the DOJ is arguing, because that seems to be what Lindsey Halligan actually did. And she got the foreperson of the grand jury to sign on to it one other person, one other grand juror was in the room. Everyone else had gone home.
I am no lawyer either, but I'm pretty sure that that is not how things work when you are dealing with courts.
Well, apparently, while you and I are not lawyers, Keith Barber actually is. And you checked in with him earlier today. He texted back to us, quote, "The Fifth Amendment guarantees that no person can be held to account for a felony without a grand jury indictment. Here, there was none," he says. "The grand jury never saw or voted on the operative indictment. It voted on a different one. The punishment should be," he said, "dismissal. And the statute of limitations has expired." And that was one of the reasons they were rushing, because it had been 5 years almost exactly that James Comey supposedly lied to Congress. Now, the case they have against them is pretty weak as is, even if it did go forward.
Yeah, just on the merits.
But if this indictment is thrown out, it's not like they can go and refile it because, well, now we are past the statute of limitations. Keith later wrote a piece over at Daily Kos about all of this where he notes that, quote, "The Constitution does not allow a prosecutor to wing it by editing a no-build indictment into one that she thinks the grand jury would have passed. Certainly, the prosecutor can prepare such an indictment and submit it afresh for the grand jury to consider, but Halligan did not do that," he notes. "On this alone," he says, "the case must be dismissed. It's over," he argues. Well, we will see if that turns out to be the case. He notes, "As to how even Halligan can fail to recognize that she is way over her head, I will never understand." He says, "If the system works properly, one, this case should be dismissed. Two, Halligan should be compelled to resign. Three, Halligan should be referred to her state bar for disciplinary actions for which she is fully deserving." Now, as NBC reports, the judge did not rule from the bench on Wednesday, saying that the issues are, quote, "too weighty and too complex for a quick decision." But Keith added a late update on his coverage to say that in reflection of the seriousness of the problem, the judge has ordered the DOJ to address Halligan's failure to secure a grand jury vote on the actual indictment by 5 p.m. today. So that may be going on even as we go to air here. They may have turned over that information to try to explain to the judge how the hell all of any of this could have happened. And whether that means we'll see a quick turnaround decision from the judge or not is unclear. But it does seem to me that if he rules that this indictment is invalid, then that's it. The case against James Comey is over until Donald Trump imagines up another one or something. But boy, I think that we're going to see a ruling forthcoming. You know, I thought that she would be probably, there's another part of this challenge, and the many challenges against her by both Comey and Tish James, is that she is unlawfully seated as the U.S. attorney in Virginia, that she needs to be tossed off this case. And if she's tossed off this case, she's the only person, only prosecutor who signed on to it. So if you find that the prosecutor who's seated, who got this indictment, was wrongly seated and she's removed from the case, there are no prosecutors signing on to the indictment. We may not even get to that step because the indictment itself may not be valid before we even have to determine whether or not she is properly or improperly seated as the U.S. attorney from the Eastern District of Virginia. One of the things that I told you at the beginning of the second Trump presidency was that he was really bad at presidenting. Here's a good case to underscore that point.
Indeed.
I mean, I have argued otherwise since the beginning of this case, that if it ever reaches a jury, it would be laughed out of court, but that it almost certainly would be tossed out before that. Given all of the huge and embarrassing, at least for Trump and DOJ, problems with this case, I didn't see this one coming, that it's essentially a made-up indictment.
Yeah.
So,
and one of the things that, that Keith had said earlier in the was that hire clowns, get a circus. And, you know, Trump certainly does love hiring clowns as long as they are loyal to him. He prizes that above all else. But it sure does make it fun to see them all fall apart.
Yes, and he doesn't seem to mind when they then need to be fired because they didn't do what he needed them to do. So
we'll find another clown to step in.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Stay tuned. I will tell you this. If I'm James Comey, I'm sleeping a whole lot easier tonight. Let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back with Rich Loges of Leaving MAGA as the MAGA coalition may, emphasis, may finally be coming apart. We'll see. And we will see if he's got any advice for those of us who may have to deal with a MAGA relative or two over the upcoming holidays. Desi, appreciate your best wishes. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to The Bradcast. Smartly done.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
It seems the songs we're singing are all about tomorrow. Tunes of promises you can't keep. Every moment bringing a love I can only borrow. You're telling me lies in your sleep.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump is telling lies even in his sleep. He is that good at it. But now, MAGA might be on to those lies a little bit. We will see. In recent days, we have detailed... welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We have detailed a sort of one data point after another in recent days where it appears that Donald Trump's ironclad grip on his presidency and, most importantly, on his own supporters in his own party does appear to be slipping, and arguably in some cases quickly. I know that some may disagree, and we may discuss counterpoints to that argument in the days ahead on this program, but even before his entire party voted in both chambers of Congress on Wednesday to force the release of the Epstein files, which Trump had been fighting and attempting to cover up for months, support from some of his strongest longtime supporters appeared to be waning, if not yet falling entirely over a cliff. By way of just one example, late last week, I cited new polling from AP that was conducted before the Democrats' landslide wins in state after state across the country in the November 4 off-year elections, finding, as AP reported, approval of the way President Donald Trump is managing the government has dropped sharply since early in his second term, with much of the rising discontent coming from fellow Republicans. The survey found that just 33% of U.S. adults approve of the way that the Republican president is managing the government. That is down from 43% in an AP NORC poll from March. But that drop, they say, was driven in large part by a decline in approval ratings among Republicans and independents. According to the polling, only about two-thirds of Republicans, 68%, said they approve of Trump's governing management. That is still a majority, but it is down sharply from 81% back in March. His approval ratings by independents, which Republicans also actually need if they want to win elections, that dropped a similar 13 points from 38% earlier this year to just about 25% approval in the recent survey. Both of those number sets, as I noted last week, are frankly abysmal for a president in the first year of a new term. But we're focusing on Republicans here for the moment, where his numbers on specific issue after specific issue are also similarly slipping. It's hardly just one poll. Survey after survey in recent weeks has found Trump approval ratings at all-time lows for his presidency, including even at the end of his last term after he incited a violent attack on the U.S. government in hopes of stealing an election that he lost. All of which has resulted in headlines this week from left, right, and center, such as from Washington Post, "Trump faces a splintering GOP and rare dissent from his party." Politico, "Seven signs Trump is losing his groove." Axios, "Behind the curtain, MAGA's metastasizing mess." The Rupert Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal, quote, "Trump's grip on Republicans shows first signs of slipping." TPM's Josh Marshall, "Trump has the look of the weak horse. People are acting accordingly." Michelle Goldberg over at New York Times, "The MAGA crackup might finally be here." Might it be? Well, maybe. Those headlines are all from before the disastrous vote, at least for Trump on Wednesday, by both chambers of Congress for the immediate release of the Epstein files, which, if they ever actually do get released, could spell even bigger trouble for him. Otherwise, why has he been working so hard for so many months to cover up what he promised his own MAGA supporters during his campaign last year that he would release? The full investigative details on an elite convicted pedophile and his friends, which, as it turns out, for many years happened to include Donald Trump, that MAGA has been clamoring to learn about for years. But even his own brain poisoned supporters have noticed by now that, yeah, he fought tooth and nail to prevent the release of those files for some reason, and they must be wondering why. But that's not all, not by a long shot. Last week, in a surprisingly tough White House interview by Laura Ingraham, of all people, of Fox News, of all places, Donald Trump, when finally pressed by someone, offered some answers to a question about his support for immigrant H-1B visas that are issued to businesses who claim that they need to hire people with skills and talents that cannot be filled, for some reason, by Americans. Now, big business, especially the tech industry that Trump has become so close to since he took office for a second term, they have pressed hard for Trump to continue making those H-1B visas available for them. His response to a question about that from Ingraham, I think it's fair to say, went over really, really poorly with MAGA supporters of the president. As Mediaite reported it, President Trump received backlash from his own supporters after he suggested in a disastrous Fox News interview that there were not enough talented Americans. After Fox News host Laura Ingraham criticized H-1B visas during an Ingraham angle interview with Trump, the president replied, quote, "Well, I agree, but you also have to bring in talent." Ingraham shot back, "We have plenty of talented people here," to which Trump insisted, "No, you don't." Here's what some of that sounded like.
There's never going to be a country like what we have right now.
And does that
the
mean,
Republicans have to talk about it, Laura.
And does that mean the H-1B visa thing will not be a big priority for your administration? Because if you want to raise wages for American workers, you can't flood the country with tens of thousands or hundreds
of
thousands
agree,
of foreign
but
workers.
You also do have to bring in talent. When
well, we
a
have
country
plenty of talented people
no,
here.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
We don't have talented
being,
people
no,
here.
No, you don't have certain talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment, like an unemployment line, and say, "I'm going to put you into a factory where we're going to make missiles," or "I'm going to put
How did
you
we ever do it before?
You can't just say country's coming in, going to invest $10 billion to build a plant, and going to take people off an unemployment line who haven't worked in 5 years, and they're going to start making missiles. It doesn't work that way.
Well, the president's remarks there quickly received backlash on social media from some of his otherwise most ardent longtime supporters. Quote, "I'm sorry, but what the F is this?" asked Logan Hall of Glenn Beck's The Blaze, noting, quote, "American talent split the atom and went to the moon. American talent built everything that the modern world now takes for granted. This is insanity," he said. "This is insane," echoed Republican politician and Lake County, Florida Commissioner Anthony Sabatini. "We've never seen an administration crash and burn in its first year so badly for no other reason than to appease donors and special interests," he said. "Trump has surrounded himself with the worst people." The usually Trump-loving, Rupert Murdoch-owned New York Post contributor Kevin Bass put it bluntly, quote, "Trump hates America and Americans." Trump just said there's, quote, "no talent in America," writes former longtime Republican Trump supporter Rich Loges in his newsletter this week. He, after voting for Trump and helping to organize his Florida campaign in both 2016 and 2020, finally gave up on what he describes now as the cult of MAGA. Amidst the darkest hours of the COVID pandemic some years ago and what he described as the deadly handling of it by both Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Trump wasn't talking about politicians or specific industries, Loges clarifies. He was talking about Americans. He was talking about the people who have been showing up to his rallies, the people defending him at Thanksgiving dinner, the people who believe he's fighting for them. He actually said the quiet part out loud. He doesn't think Americans are good enough. He's betraying those who have stood by him. MAGA, he adds, is furious. For those feeling doubts about Trump, Loges argues, this kind of disrespect cuts through because it's not about policy disagreements or media spin. It's about being told by the person they have been defending that they are not worthy of his respect. These doubts, Loges observes, are the beginning of freedom. Joining us now is Rich Loges, a now former member of the Republican Party and that cult of MAGA, which he has explained to us on various appearances on the show over the years is something that he used to spend every day thinking about, talking about, working on, and even dreaming about, and has dozens of MAGA hats to prove it, at least until he somehow found his way out of that cult and has since turned his attention to both making amends for damages caused to relationships during that period and, critically, helping others to leave and or help their friends and family members to do so at his organization named, appropriately enough, Leaving MAGA. We sometimes refer to Rich as our MAGA whisperer on this program. Oh, Mr. Loges, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Oh, it's good to be back with you. Always a pleasure, Brad. Thank you so much.
Rich, it has been a while since we last spoke. I think it was after the presidential election last year. And I've sort of been thinking about you and your group quite a bit since then, particularly in recent months, as Trump's apparent slide in so many different ways seems to have begun. And I've been wondering what you're seeing and hearing at Leaving MAGA. But before we get to that there, between the recent interview on Fox News, the efforts that Trump has been going through to try and prevent the release of the Epstein files, turning on folks like Marjorie Taylor Greene, et cetera, as a longtime now former MAGA guy, why are we suddenly seeing so many of his supporters seeming to turn on him now versus so many opportunities to do so previously, as you see it? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think, Brad, inevitably there was going to be what was going to commence was going to be some kind of cannibalization of MAGA from within. And one of the really difficult parts for me in my decision to leave MAGA was a recognition that Trump did not, in fact, actually care about me when I thought that he did. Mm. And I think with the Epstein story in particular, what it shows is that there is this burgeoning cognitive dissonance throughout the MAGA community, because I think that a lot of people who believe that Trump would, in fact, release these files and then decided that there were no files and that he wasn't going to, and that he was going, and now he's going to again. I think that people in MAGA are starting to ask themselves if Donald Trump has been lying to them for many, many years. And it's been really remarkable to see how people who were once so close to the president, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, mm-hmm. are now speaking out. And I would like to say about Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, it's really one of two outcomes. She's either just being opportunistic, which is how most politicians are, or she might be going through a transformative, genuine change of heart. Mm-hmm. And I would like to keep an open mind that what she's showing us right now is that she's reached her own line of demarcation. And I think that there are many in MAGA right now, Brad, who are quietly starting to have doubts. And we want to be there, leaving MAGA at our organization, to catch them when they start to have those doubts, when they start to question their allegiance, when they start to suspect that maybe this movement that they have been so devoted to, that has been a part of their lives and their identity and their being and their personhood, maybe it's not in fact the movement that they thought it was. And maybe they're starting to come to conclude and realize that Donald Trump is not the leader that they thought he was.
Do you recognize, Rich, in Marjorie Taylor Greene, anything sort of similar to what you have seen with those who have reached out to you, who are in the process of leaving MAGA? Because something really does seem like it is changing with her. Of course, I'm always skeptical, but it really does seem like something has changed. Do you recognize something akin to what others leaving MAGA who come to you have in common with what you're saying with Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Yeah, I think that there are some commonalities. You know, one in particular here that pertains and is relevant to my own life is that having children originally was one of the reasons why I was such a devoted MAGA soldier. Mm-hmm. But it was having children that also were the motivators for me to eventually leave MAGA. You know, I always say in my odyssey that Ron DeSantis platforming anti-vaxxers when kids were dying of COVID, it was one of the accelerants for me in leaving MAGA. Mm-hmm. And with the Epstein story, we're also talking about children. We're talking about I know that Megyn Kelly would perhaps disagree with that statement, but we're talking about young females, you know, not adult women yet. Mm-hmm. And I think for Marjorie Taylor Greene, there was a red line for her. If this is in fact genuine on her part, then she's reached a red line. And I think that red line has to do with the safety and well-being of children, mm-hmm. which was a red line for me as well. And it's a red line for so many others who have told their stories with us and given witness to their own lives, you know, whether it was through immigration or it was through January 6th, one lady whose entree into MAGA was through a Christian nationalist church. Our epiphanies happen gradually and then suddenly all at once. And I'm seeing that similarly with Marjorie Taylor Greene as well.
Beyond Greene, how do you find the rank and file MAGA folks are dealing with this Epstein matter? You mentioned, you know, the he was against it before he was for it, before he was against it, and so on and so forth. He's had this sort of month-long effort to cover up what he had promised them last year that he would release in full if he was elected. Has that been a big element in waking folks up, as you've seen, or are many of them still finding ways to sort of justify his apparent turn on the matter after taking office?
I think that there is still a lot of denial within the MAGA community. I have a hypothesis, Brad, that I think that most people in MAGA deep, deep down know that Donald Trump is a dishonest person. In my mm-hmm. conversations with people in MAGA, when I've brought this up to them, the response usually isn't, "No, Rich, that's not true. He's an honest person." The response is usually, "Well, what about the Democrats?" So there's not an act. So there's no reputation of Donald Trump as a dishonest person based on my conversations with people in MAGA. I said last year at a video testimonial I gave at the Democratic National Convention when I worked for the Kamala Harris campaign that Trump's toxic superpower is lying. Mm. And I think that with the Epstein story in particular, Trump has lied one too many times. The thousands upon thousands upon thousands of lies, I think that for some in MAGA, they're starting to now stick, but it's
so they it's so they not, there were it, you're suggesting that until now they deep down they knew he was lying, but they did not care. They didn't mind. But now something has finally given way with the Epstein lies.
I think part of the reason for not minding is if one believes that the alternative is far worse, then we will justify the unjustifiable, and we will defend the person who's lying. But I do think that the Epstein story has brought to the forefront this moment in this reckoning where people in MAGA who do care about the well-being of children and care about their safety are now starting to wonder why there has been such fierce opposition to releasing these files. Democrats don't have this opposition. If there are Democrats named in those files, so be it. We want to see them. We want to know everyone who may have had an association and an affiliation with this person. But why is it that we went from having files to not to now having again? If Trump was, he was either lying then or he's lying right now. And for most in MAGA, it's become increasingly harder to turn a blind eye to all of the lying that Trump has been doing.
Now, Trump has, of course, been both lying and breaking promises, turning on his own supporters in various ways for years, even during his first term. Why do you suppose, Rich Loges, that that interview with Laura Ingraham on Fox was just so explosive in MAGA world? I mean, that was different, it seems to me, than what I've seen before when they don't like something he said. I mean, there was really sort of a group explosion against him. Why do you suppose that was suddenly?
Well, Trump has done effectively is taken right-wing politics, which are not new and novel, but he branded them Make America Great Again. Mm-hmm. So he branded a form of right-wing politics that have been around for generations, and he gave it its own moniker, and that's why he's there's such fealty to him, because he's the titular leader of the community. But as part of Make America Great Again and its brand and its ethos, there is this nationalism and America First nativism. Mm. And the irony of the president's appearance, while he's wrong in saying that there's not talent, he did highlight, and I'm trying to be as objective as I can here, he did highlight the fact that some legal immigration is actually good for the country. So it was Laura Ingraham taking the nativist nationalist approach. Mm-hmm. But because the entire brand of Make America Great Again has been about America first and the world last, suddenly when he starts talking about America not having the talented people necessary to perform, for example, manufacturing jobs, the base who so closely supported him and worked on his behalf as volunteers, as grassroots activists, as donors, they feel slighted and they feel betrayed. And I think for Trump, he doesn't fear, or at least he hasn't until recently, he hasn't feared significant loss of his base. And I think he's now starting to feel those cracks forming. Mm. And I think now he's aware of it, which is why he's more confused and vulgar than usual. And I think it's because he recognizes this.
And what we have sort of seen in recent months, and it seems to be gaining speed, is this, you know, initially very slow sort of turn against him, finally picking up speed in recent weeks between Epstein and the Ingraham interview and so much more. Do you find that change as Republicans, because the numbers that are turning against Trump seem to mostly be coming from Republicans now turning against Trump. Do you see that as being reflected in the number of MAGA folks or friends and family thereof that you have been hearing from in recent weeks who are now reaching out to your leaving MAGA group?
It's going to be a little bit slower with the MAGA supporters than, say, for example, compared to partisan Republican voters. One of the good pieces of news when it comes to Trump support is that most Trump voters are not actually MAGA supporters. Now, that doesn't mean there's a small number of MAGA supporters. There are millions of MAGA supporters across the country, and I think that people may not necessarily, Brad, want to hear that, but there are many, many more than we wish that there were. But having said that, I do think that a lot of partisan Republicans are starting to feel a little bit of remorse for their doubt and doubts for supporting Trump because of what's happening with Epstein, because of the tariffs, seeing our neighbors apprehended without due process unconstitutionally, watching jobs get cut, necessary, important jobs from our federal government. And I think that even though MAGA supporters will be slower to lose support, they're also seeing some of their neighbors and community members lose jobs and get apprehended. And when it comes to, for example, the topic of affordability, no matter how much Trump lies about cost being lower, the fact is people are living expensive lives and they know that their lives are expensive and they know that costs are not going down. So Trump can lie all he'd like about how he supposedly brought down the cost of living as he promised, but people are living that economic reality, and including those in MAGA, and they know that their costs are not going down. In fact, for some line items, our costs are higher today than they were even in January when he took office.
Sure. And I think what I'm trying to get at here is, Rich, do you notice, along with these news events that play out over the months, do you notice sort of overall patterns of folks reaching out to you during the first year of the Trump's second term? Does it go up and down at various points? Is there a steady progression of more and more? Is there anything that we can learn from patterns that you've sort of observed at your group so far at this point in his second term, as far as what actually does push MAGA folks away from Trump and the MAGA cult?
So this year has ebbed and flowed a little bit for us with testimonials, but I am happy to report that Leaving MAGA as an organization has never been busier. We are working on multiple testimonials as we speak. Our requests for speaking and appearances have never been greater. Our fundraising has never been higher. And I also am happy to report to listeners, Brad, that we have some people in our community who were 2024 MAGA supporters who decided to leave MAGA. They're not ready yet to tell their story, but eventually when they are, we're going to tell it for them. So we've had people who didn't leave just before the 2020 or 2024 election. We have some who were 2024 MAGA devotees, just like I was, and they decided to leave. And the reasons for leaving, while they're varied, one that's in particular has been prominent is what Trump has done on immigration. And I think that topic in particular, the inhumane treatment of immigrants, that's when we start to see the gradual and then sudden all at once departure of people in from MAGA, I have a feeling that immigration is going to be, if not the core reason for leaving, it's going to be amongst the core reasons for why people left.
Well, that's ironic, isn't it? Do you hear, Rich, more from folks that are leaving MAGA themselves or from their friends and family members trying to help folks out of the cult? Because I know that your group focuses on support for both of those communities.
We do, and we actually started a few months ago weekly free online support groups for friends and family. And we did that because of an overwhelming demand and request, not just with the holidays upcoming, but just in people's day-to-day lives, dealing with the traumatic reality of having their relationships been torn asunder by this person, Donald Trump, and this movement. And so we continue to host these online events for people who want to learn more about them. They can reach out to us at our website at leavingmaga.org. They can read our testimonials there as well, all of our leaders who have decided to leave. But reconciliation is a really key component of the Leaving MAGA work that we do, and it's very much a part of our mission statement. We feel that we want people to know that we don't want people to give up on their MAGA close ones. What I and our leaders show is that we are living proof that it's possible for people to change. And I think that anyone who's willing to change, take responsibility, and seek genuine penitence, our philosophy of Leaving MAGA is we want to offer those people grace. And that's why I keep, for example, an open mind with someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene. If this is in fact a sincere transformation, I would welcome her into the Leaving MAGA fold.
On your own personal level, when you finally left MAGA, did you find that friends and family that you had been alienated from over the years, that they were welcoming in bringing you back into the fold?
Well, I have to give myself credit for something. I knew how to pick the very best of friends, because all of them accepted my apology when I approached them. And I said that I was sorry for thinking of them as an existential threat to me because they were blue voters. And I lumped them into a big category of political opposition and enemy to me. Mm. And in fact, Brad, there was one in particular, a very important person in my life dating back to college, who said to me, he said, "Rich, I always knew that you'd come back." And I say that because for those who are listening who have MAGA friends and family, and I suspect that most listening do, I want you to know that that good person you knew before MAGA, that person is still there. Mm. But we can't change hearts and minds with facts and policy. You know, MAGA outrage is to a large extent a kind of addiction. The outrage creates dopamine hits. And when someone has that kind of an addiction, facts and expertise don't tend to get people out of it. What gets people out of it is showing that if anyone out there have friends and family, if their loved ones ever have doubts, I would encourage the friends and family listening to be a friendly ear and let them know that if they ever want to talk about their own confusion and uncertainty about their support for Trump, that they can be a friendly ear for them and that they can listen and find the healing that's needed to leave MAGA. When I left, it was good for my soul and my psyche after I left MAGA.
And I know that we've discussed this with you before on the program, just before the holidays. As a matter of fact, last time you were here, I think it was almost a year ago this week. Is there advice that you can offer to folks who may be seeing and talking to family members, MAGA family members, over the holidays that they might otherwise avoid for the rest of the year? Is there a best, most productive way, I suppose, to sort of reach out to them this year that might help them at least get closer to leaving MAGA? Do you have any tips for our listeners along those lines?
Sure. Thank you. I would encourage everyone at our website. We put together a guide, which is called Reaching Out. And we've got some don'ts and do's in there on how to engage our MAGA friends and family. So some of the don'ts include: don't lean heavily on expertise. Don't try to bait into an argument. Don't try to win an argument with facts and policy. It doesn't work. Mm. One do that we have found is very effective is we encourage friends and family to ask the MAGA identified person why they believe what they believe. And what we've discovered with that is some of the friends and family are a little hesitant to ask that question because they feel like if they ask it, then they must be defending or excusing or accepting whatever the answer from the MAGA identified person is. But we're not asking you to do that. But if you ask someone why they believe what they believe, we start to peel the onion back a little bit, and we get to one of the common denominators of MAGA allegiance, which is mis and disinformation. I trafficked in mis and disinformation for years. I allowed mis and disinformation to shape my worldview until I figured out that I was being lied to and I needed to get away from those lies and falsehoods. But that's one tip that I would really encourage people to do in the conversation is, if we feel like all parties are amenable to it, ask the MAGA person, you know, "I'd like to understand why you believe what you believe," mm-hmm. and then let that person speak. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that for those who do that, they're going to discover that there's actually going to open up a conversation that they may not have had otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you put it that way, I wonder if that question would lead a lot of people to ask themselves, well, why is it that I believe what I believe, and where is that information coming from? And it may be a question that a lot of them have not asked themselves yet. Again, that's a free downloadable friends and family guide called Reaching Out that you can get at the leavingmaga.org website. Rich Loges is the founder and executive director of that group, which I believe is really doing important, courageous work. Rich, I continue to thank you year after year for what you're doing. You can check them out at leavingmaga.org. You can sign up for their newsletter at leavingmaga.substack.com. And you can find them on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Leaving MAGA. Rich Loges, always a delight speaking to you, sir. Thank you for joining us again. Thank you for the work you do. And hope you have a happy holiday.
Thank you. And a happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you, sir. All right, Desi Doyen, you feel feeling any better about heading heading back to Texas over the holidays?
Got a plan? Every family is different. Everybody's got different right-wing relatives to deal with, but yep. I am looking forward to taking Rich's ideas, and hopefully they'll be helpful, because I am not willing to write off the MAGA members of my family. And I think the thing that...
Well, that's a choice for a lot of people, isn't it? You have to either figure out how to talk with them, or you just got to say, that's it. We'll talk to you later after, you know...
Whenever
this nightmare ends.
I mean, we shall see. Like I said, every family is different. But the thing that I really appreciate about Leaving MAGA is that it seems like they give people an off-ramp and a safe place, a community that can help replace the sort of brain-poisoned MAGA community that they were in. But it gives them a new community of people that have been where they've been. And I think that that is probably very helpful on all kinds of levels to help them re-enter society,
and,
as it were.
And not just people who are actually leaving MAGA, but the even more people out there who know someone in MAGA, who have a close friend or a close family member who they have been alienated from over these years because of this turn that so many people made. And again, it's not really a political thing. It is something else. It is beyond that. It is brain poisoning, as you described it. It is brainwashing. It is misinformation and disinformation that these folks, for whatever reason, have taken to heart, and it has changed their character. And has, alienated them from so many of their own family members and their own close friends. So here's at least a starting point. Always good to check in with Rich Loges. Thanks again to him. And you might want to check out leavingmaga.org. All right, we got to get out here. Thanks also to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, where you can share it with your friends, your family, people you know and love and hate. You can also hit a donate button while you're there, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you will find me at TheBradBlog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.